Chapter 8. The Nature of Inquiry by Scott Greenberger. Every existence is an event. This fact is nothing at which to repine and nothing to gloat over. It is something to be noted and used. Do eat, 1925 over 1981, page 63. Essential questions. What are the three types of scientific reasoning? What are research paradigms? What are the specific research designs used as the framework for scientific research in this chapter? What are the two preliminary considerations to conducting quantitative and qualitative studies? What is a research gap? Introduction. Discovery is an activity that intersects both ordinary and scientific inquiry. Ordinary inquiry is the commonly overlooked exploration, discovery. Reading a newspaper, for example, to learn about a current event is a form of ordinary inquiry. Science, in contrast, utilizes systematic observation and experiment to discover nature. Unfortunately, modern science, with its complexity, specialization, and formality, can often seem unfamiliar, or even inaccessible. To learn science effectively, one need merely start with a familiar discovery. This is the entry point to appreciating ordinary inquiry and making science more accessible. Comparing ordinary and scientific inquiry, asking questions and discovery. This image is of a red apple that is sitting on a desk. Why do people ask questions? The answer lies in the desire to know something in more detail, or to reconcile experience with new information. What, then, is it to know? This requires much more explanation. In philosophy and science, the study of knowledge refers to how people go about obtaining facts, and how people justify their belief in such facts. For example, think about the image of an apple on a table fair, 1990. When asked to describe these objects, a person might simply state there is an apple on a table. There would be no apparent reason to ask questions. This is one difference between ordinary and scientific inquiry. Science would require a more complete explanation. Words, meaning, and continuity. In science and life, there is a difference between phenomena having continuity and being indistinguishable. Continuity denotes some sort of connection between phenomena. There are similarities between ordinary and scientific inquiry, but these similarities are due to their mutual connection. Discovery refers to this connection, or, in formal terms, the intersection of ordinary and scientific inquiry. To say these two types of inquiry have continuity is to say there is an uninterrupted relationship intersection of the two. As noted later in this chapter, there is a sense in which ordinary and scientific inquiry are discontinuous. This may seem confusing. The point to consider is how something can have both continuity and discontinuity with something else, to be necessary in one respect but unnecessary in another. When researchers state that scientific inquiry is an outgrowth of ordinary inquiry, this helps explain this sort of phenomena, but it only shows part of the picture. The example of a table may provide further explanation of this relationship. One can state that the legs of the table have continuity with the tabletop. By definition, the table includes some sort of legs upon which a top rests. Here, the table, taken as a whole, represents the entire activity of inquiry. The legs of the table are analogous with ordinary inquiry, and the top represents scientific inquiry. This example appears inconsistent, for it implies the lack of scientific inquiry without ordinary inquiry, and no ordinary inquiry without scientific inquiry. In one specific sense, this is correct. Although, temporally speaking, scientific inquiry is an outgrowth of ordinary inquiry, that is, ordinary inquiry precedes the activity of scientific inquiry, the activity of inquiry contains both and needs both to be what it is, just as in the table example. This is not to state that life cannot be lived without science. Surely, life was lived before the birth of formal science, and there are many worthy endeavors in life that do not include science. It means that either type of inquiry taken in isolation is deficient. Put another way, some of the deficiencies of both types of inquiry are satisfied by the awareness and embracing of their continuity. Science without everyday life does not have a purpose. Everyday life without systematic ways of knowing is limited in scope, ignoring the tools accessible for humans to use. Words such as apple are products of language. Through language, humans assign meaning to objects. An apple, for example, can't be understood as something that is relatively round, has color, such as red or green, and is the kind of fruit that a person can eat. Stating there is an apple on a table is evidence of a larger system of cultural and linguistic knowledge. Inquiry, though, requires an impetus. As do 1938 over 1986 and Thayer 1990 suggested, inquiry starts with focus attention. The beam of light entering the room might focus the observer's attention on the objects. The sound of an apple hitting a wooden floor might do the same. In each of these cases, there would be a reason to ask the question, what is that? This experience of coming to know may change or prompt further inquiry if, for example, the beam of light makes the object on the table appear to be a different color, for example, orange. A person might then ask, is it an apple or an orange? In this case, the observer would need to inquire further, maybe by touching or tasting the object. Thayer, 1990. The observer in these cases possessed refocused attention, a cursory level of understanding of the observation, and the need for intervention to clarify such understanding. This is a basic framework of scientific inquiry. The previous example illustrates in a simple way how people inquire and come to know things in everyday life. In the example, there was no apparent harm in wrongfully identifying the apple as an orange, but in social science, what is determined to be knowledge may influence such decisions as social policy, safety of pharmaceuticals, or appropriate therapy provided to a person with a severe psychological disorder. In each of these instances, ordinary inquiry would not be reliable and systematic enough to support such decisions. This is one purpose of scientific inquiry, to provide valid and reliable knowledge for decision-making. Science is an outgrowth of inquiry, but there are many differences between ordinary inquiry and science. Do 1938 over 1986, Garrison, 1996, Hawk, 2010, King, Keohane, and Verber, 1994. In ordinary inquiry, inquiring ends when the query requires no additional information. Once obtained, the observer may not be motivated to inquire further. More importantly, in ordinary inquiry, people typically do not have the tools, training, or experience to measure abstract constructs accurately, such as motivation or stress, or the impetus to use an exhaustively detailed description to explain a natural situation. Scientific inquiry, in comparison with other forms of inquiry, has proven indispensable in obtaining reliable information on various levels of analysis. Levels of analysis: events occur at three general levels, global, contextual, and situational. Ballerand, 1997. The more information given about a setting, the closer a description is to providing contextual features. If a description provides information about an actual event, with all of the vibrancy of human experience, the description would be one of a particular situation. Understanding the context and situation are crucial to inquiry, as they provide the boundaries, meaning, and grounding to what the person observes, and they help in categorizing local evidence. These details take one beyond simple descriptions. In contrast, the global level offers a panoramic view unlike either a context or a situation. At the global level of analysis, an observer might analyze phenomena using general categories. For example, the researcher analyzing organizational behavior might be interested in the gender of the employees, age, frequency of absences, and total number of employees attending each day, but the researcher might also be interested in strictly abstract concepts, such as the stress of employees' affective state, the type and amount of experience of employees' proficiency, or even the reasons individual employees work in individual departments' motivation. At the global level, in comparing the average frequency of these categories, the researcher would have additional details to predict future events or ways to make the organizational experience more manageable. As shown in this organizational example, inquiry involves the description of different types of data. Types of data, words and numbers. There are two types of data used in describing, numbers and qualities. Numbers explain phenomena and, when converted to words, describe qualities. As in a numeric rating system, the number 5 could indicate a person strongly agrees with a question. In this case, the number represents an expressed quality, an agreement. In the organizational behavior example, numbers describe age, frequency of absences, and total number of employees attending each day. By using numbers, the researcher might want to identify the average age of employees, days with most frequent absences, and average daily attendance. In each of these cases, there is a relationship between a quality and a number. Researchers experience qualities emotionally, express them in words, and convert them to numbers for analysis. Describing felt qualities is expressing in words the subjective experience of a person. For example, a person might express generalized feelings of optimism using words such as cheerful, confident, and hopeful to describe the emotion. In using words to describe an event, the objects of the event become more than just felt. For example, it is quite possible to enjoy flowers in their colored form and delicate fragrance without knowing anything about plants theoretically. Do eat 1934 over 1987, page 10. Upon reflection, a person can express these qualities as objectively related to other objects. In reflection, the person interweaves the ideas of color and fragrance with the ideas of air, soil, water, and sunlight that produced them. Do eat 1934 over 1987. Discovery of this tension between the immediate apprehension and the interconnected awareness marks out some of the traits of inquiry into qualities. Do eat 1934 over 1987. Scientific reasoning. Abductive, deductive, and inductive reasoning, as implied by heuristics, mental acts follow the pattern. As Minamayor 2010 stated, one can understand the scaffolding of this pattern as the binding of ideas through observation to form judgments. The question whether inductive inferences are justified, or under what conditions, is known as the problem of induction. Popper, 1959 over 2005, page 4. Suppose a person lights a candle. After an hour, the same person observes the candle flickering, and then the flame ceases. One judgment might be that the melting wax extinguished the flame. This is a simple case of binding ideas through observation to form a judgment. This, however, does not preclude other reasons for the flame going out, e.g., a gust of wind or a defective wick, but it does offer a glimpse into a normal pattern of reasoning. In this same pattern, researchers use inductive and deductive reasoning to form propositions. As Do Eat 1938 over 1986 stated, the activities of inductive and deductive reasoning are cyclical, they are two sides of the same process of discovery. Inductive reasoning involves putting forth propositions, or claims, based upon exemplars found in experience. This occurred in concluding that the flame ceased due to melting wax. Deductive reasoning, in contrast, involves eliminating alternative explanation for the same phenomenon, such as the idea of wine as a factor in the flame ceasing. Deductive reasoning subtracts items no longer relevant because of new information, such as if the researcher discovered the windows closed. Induction then is the binding of ideas through observation to form conclusions, while deduction is the introduction of new evidence through observation to eliminate possible conclusions. This ebb and flow of reasoning, from induction to deduction and back, allows scientists to arrive at warranted assertions, inferences rigorously confirmed and, therefore, grounded through experience, in the back and forth of idea making and deduction. Do Eat 1938 over 1986. This reasoning does not, however, account for surprising results or provide reasons to pursue alternative explanations for such results. Creative intuition is an indispensable but often overlooked component of reasoning in science. Policastro, 1995, Popper, 1959 over 2005. Contrary to putting forth probable inferences, induction or eliminating unlikely conclusions, deduction, abduction, or abductive reasoning refers to a kind of strategic guessing. McCaughan, 2008. In some cases, this kind of reasoning provides the motivation to pursue an inference that may seem improbable. In the candle example, if after close inspection the wick remained, one could have excluded the defective wick from explanation, but this would not absolutely exclude this conclusion as a possible direction for inquiry. In research, one must determine which paths seem worthy for exploration, at least worthy enough to expend considerable time, effort, or monetary resources. McCaughan described pursuit-worthy endeavors by explaining, abductions yield recommendations about what courses of action to pursue given our values and given the information and resources at our disposal, page 454. Developing hypotheses. Both hypotheses and propositions are predictions, but there is a difference between the two within scientific inquiry. The proposition is a conceptual prediction expressed in words, while hypotheses are expanded propositions that include the criterion of testability. image of one white swan and one black swan in a pond. Proposing an idea on logical grounds does not mean it exists, let alone that one can test it. If a person proposes that all swans are white, this person would be making a categorical claim due to 1938 over 1986, Popper, 1959 over 2005. The person would not be making the claim about kinds of swans, or a singular swan, only an abstract claim that every creature categorized as a swan is white. Assume the person inspected 100 swans. If all swans were known to be white, the person would ordinarily expect to find that all 100 swans in the sample were white. The evidence in this sample is 100 white swans, but how exhausted does the evidence have to be? Suppose another sample of 100 swans contained at least one that was black. As Popper stated, no matter how many instances of white swans we may have observed, this does not justify the conclusion that all swans are white. Page 4. This is the purpose of testing a hypothesis, not to prove conclusively that all swans are white, but to provide a falsifiable backdrop to inference. This requires testing the hypothesis through experiment. To restate Popper's point, observing that all swans in the sample are white does not mean that all swans everywhere are white. It simply means that all swans in the sample are white. The phrase "in the sample" is the key to understanding how researchers use hypotheses in scientific inquiry. In social science, a hypothesis typically refers to a prediction about a sample of people. How then are hypotheses developed in social science? A good hypothesis starts with a clear research question. The resulting hypothesis of a question that is too broad might be difficult to answer. A hypothesis based on a question that is too narrow might not be relevant enough to pursue for scientific purposes. A literature review, which involves analyzing previous scholarly research on the topic in question, is an efficient way of determining the right questions to ask. The literature review would also provide exposure to types of hypotheses previously put forth on the topic. Once questions are determined, then the researcher can formulate testable predictions. Even though not all scientific inquiry requires hypothesis testing, understanding hypothesis development helps where it may apply, as well as where it may not. Framework of Scientific Research. Creswell's 2014 Research Design Framework serves to explore the research process for a few reasons. First, Creswell's framework is a clear and accessible introduction for beginning researchers. Second, the scope of Creswell's text is comprehensive enough to offer an overview of each of the major scientific methodologies. There are three components to Creswell's 2014 framework, including research paradigms: positivist, postpositivist, constructivist, transformative, and pragmatic research methods: quantitative, qualitative, and mixed methods, and specific research designs: non-experimental, experimental, phenomenological, case study, narrative, and grounded theory. The section uses the terms quantitative and qualitative early. Definitions follow in detail much later. For now, it will be sufficient to think of quantitative research as referring to the use of numbers to describe data, and qualitative research as referring to the use of words and qualities to describe phenomena. Research paradigms: having a formulated view of a context is to operate under a paradigm, a lens through which a researcher views the context of inquiry. For science, the paradigm is the tacit rules under which researchers operate when taking certain approaches in scientific inquiry. Thomas Kuhn, a philosopher of science, first gave the word paradigm a specific meaning. As Kuhn 1962 over 1996 conceived it, the study of paradigms is what mainly prepares the student for membership in the particular scientific community with which he will later practice. Page 10. Such an acceptance allows the researcher to embrace the traditions within a specific scientific approach, the beliefs that underlie the approach, and the practices that keep it coherent. In this way, research paradigms provide researchers with a means of formulating approaches to scientific inquiry that are consistent with prior practices in the field. Creswell 2014 outlined four paradigms that form the basis of current scientific inquiry, namely postpositivist, constructivist, transformative, and pragmatic. These research paradigms are roughly consistent with those put forth by several other researchers: Bloomberg and Volpe, 2016, Denzin and Lincoln, 2000. In addition, the section reviews positivism as a precursor to postpositivism. Positivist and postpositivist paradigms involve the view of inquiry as the measurement of phenomena and discovery of facts, with postpositivism adding the need for hypothesis testing. In contrast, constructivist and transformative paradigms generally involve the view of inquiry as the exploration of individual differences, social construction of meaning, and the means to empower individuals transformative to participate in discovery. Finally, the pragmatic paradigm involves the view of inquiry as the employment of all practical means to obtain knowledge, including the use of both quantitative and qualitative methods. While Creswell's list of paradigms is useful as a heuristic for understanding dominant perspectives in social science research, it is not exhaustive or an entirely accurate depiction of every kind or combination of scientific approach. Eshelman 1981 stated, "Research methods are not merely different ways of achieving the same end. They carry with them different ways of asking questions and often different commitments to educational and social ideology." Page 10. As such, there is much more to research than the paradigmatic view indicates, but they certainly provide a useful starting point and a foreground to understand the reasons for choosing certain research approaches. Shulman's 1981 insight underscores the value of understanding paradigms within scientific research. Although most scientific studies will include the review of literature, the methods section, and an analysis of data collected, decisions made about which studies to include in the review, how research questions are to be presented with a prediction or not, and how the data are to be analyzed depend, in part, on the paradigm under which the researcher operates. For example, researchers operating under a postpositivist paradigm would use research questions to guide their study and make predictions about likely research outcomes, as well as seek to confirm their predictions. Conversely, researchers operating under a constructivist paradigm would also use research questions to guide their inquiry but would not make such predictions. In each of these cases, the conventions traditionally utilized within each respective paradigm would tacitly or explicitly govern the researcher's decisions. Two terms relevant to discussing paradigms are epistemology and ontology. Although not named as such earlier, epistemology is the study of knowledge, which outlines how researchers obtain facts and justify their belief in such facts. Within social science, the term ontology refers to the study of being, specifically how researchers define reality, to what degree personal perception and values are important to inquiring about human existence. Quine, 1948. Because exploring a deep understanding of human behavior and social interaction is a complex task, qualitative researchers often explicitly use these terms to guide and explain their inquiry. The epistemological and ontological perspective of the researcher often determine the kind of method used and the means to enact the method. The following is a historical sketch of primary research paradigms. Positivist in the 19th century, Augusta Kohn-Schmaus, 2008, coined the term positivism. The positivist paradigm supported the program of discovery of obtainable facts. Taku 2011 explained that the term positive meant something that is real, has use, and can be measured. In the social sciences, this implied that facts were not encumbered significantly by context, that understanding the context of facts was not of prime importance. As Schmaus stated, however, the sense of discovering the real world still connoted a sense that researchers were the discoverers, and, because of this, research under positivism did not completely abandon contextual considerations. For positivist researchers, context simply was not the primary focus, or considered substantially relevant to obtaining knowledge about the world. Within social science, positivism is no longer widely accepted as a valid approach to inquiry. There are many reasons for this, but one important reason could be its neglect of context. Postpositivism and later paradigms all, to some degree, consider context as an important and, in some cases, necessary component to social science research. Postpositivism replaced positivism. In the postpositivist paradigm, although the goal is to discover facts, such facts are deemed falsifiable, which introduces the need for exhaustively testing hypotheses. As Onwuebuzi, Johnson, and Collins 2009 stated, they postpositivists assert that all observation is inherently theory-laden and fallible and that all theory can be modified. Page 121. Popper 1959-2005 qualified the shift away from positivism by proposing that, to be considered scientific, a hypothesis must be capable of being falsified, or subject to the process of falsification hypothesis testing. In effect, researchers operating under the postpositivist paradigm use hypotheses and require that they be tested in the field. Quantitative researchers predominantly operate under the post-positivist paradigm. Constructivist. A constructivist conception of reality refers to the idea that reality is constructed through social interaction and interaction with the environment. This social construction implies that there are multiple accounts of reality, that reality is pluralistic. Don Wildhuizen et al., 2009. In terms of epistemology, researchers operating under a constructivist paradigm viewed knowledge as socially constructed or socially mediated, as convention, rather than factual or as unchanging facts in the sense of either positivist or post-positivist paradigms. The researcher operating under this paradigm focuses on the unique qualities of individuals and socially constructed experience. This shift from inquiring about facts to a focus on uniquely experienced realities, and how these experiences create unique or singular phenomena, is not a trivial one. Within social science, the shift is from seeing the world as theory-laden but real and measurable to seeing the world as subjectively unique and socially mediated. In this view, unique experience should not be glossed over or referred to as kinds or categories. For a researcher operating under the constructivist paradigm, experience frames and substantially alters the meaning of discovered knowledge. One implication of this is that, under this paradigm, scientific knowledge obtained about human experience can only be similar but not the same or identical for any two or more people or cultures. The very idea of generalizing uniqueness, in this view, is contradictory. To generalize the results from a scientific study to populations outside of the sample, there is a requirement, among other things, to assume sufficient similarities between the two populations. Under the constructivist paradigm, even if the age, gender, and other characteristics of the participants were kept the same in the two populations, the individual differences in one population would make using the results in the other complicated, and in some cases not even viewed as possible. Qualitative researchers typically operate under the constructivist paradigm. Transformative. The transformative paradigm also is aligned well with qualitative research. This paradigm is a combination of several perspectives that Denson Handling Kent 2000 identified as including critical theory and participatory approaches to inquiry. The overarching assumption in this perspective is the presumed existence of human oppression, and the resulting need to alleviate such oppression. Creswell 2014 explained that these perspectives necessarily link scientific inquiry with its historical and political roots and serve as foundations for empowerment of people through the discovery of knowledge. The transformative perspective focuses on identifying the constraints placed on people by race, gender, and socioeconomic status in order to increase awareness of inherent oppression. As with the constructivist paradigm, there is a focus on subjective concerns, but the primary difference is that this approach involves viewing reality through the lens of power structures. A transformative scientific inquiry seeks to engage individuals in the process of empowerment by lifting the constraints that limit human potential. Discovery, in this view, is framed by the necessity to enfranchise individuals in the production of socially situated meaning-making. This perspective involves viewing human collaboration as a way to emancipate socially oppressed people. An example of such meaning-making is action research, which is generating knowledge in the real-life setting for the purpose of improving practice. Creswell, 2014. Pragmatic. The pragmatic paradigm centers on the pragmatic maxim that scientific inquiry is for practical purposes. McCaughan, 2008. Pragmatic approaches to inquiry situate the inquirer in a natural setting, and allow the employment of all practical means to obtain knowledge, including the analysis of both quantitative and qualitative data. This approach allows for the acknowledgement of the tentative and tension-filled nature of human existence. In the pragmatic approach, reality is viewed as experience-dependent, and knowledge is obtained within the context of inquiry. Dewey 1938 over 1986 defined this type of approach to inquiry as the controlled or directed transformation of an indeterminate situation into one that is so determinate in its constituent distinctions and relations as to convert the elements of the original situation into a unified whole. Page 109. As on Wildhuizen et al., 2009 and Grement 2006 noted, the pragmatic paradigm is typically associated with mixed methods inquiry. Research methodology, as previously stated, a simple way of grasping the difference between quantitative and qualitative research is to think of quantitative as using numbers and qualitative as using words to describe phenomena. Viewed this way, the mixed method approach would use both numbers and words. Although not entirely accurate, this heuristic is a good starting point. Cresswell 2014 and Wiersma 2000 provided additional scaffolding to this heuristic in stating that method differences are based upon both the philosophy of the researcher paradigm and the technique employed in data collection. As such, differences in method of inquiry rest, in part, on beliefs about facts and whether such facts can be separated from the values researchers hold. Wiersma 2000. The fact-value distinction is another way of using paradigms to characterize different types of research. In quantitative research, separating facts from values is not only normal practice but is necessary to determine the validity of research. Conversely, in qualitative inquiry, researchers viewed facts as inseparable from both researcher and participant values. For a qualitative researcher, separating facts from personal values would be viewed as eliminating part of the context of inquiry, not something many qualitative researchers would want to do. The credibility of qualitative research rests in part on its value transparency. Quantitative research. There are two accessible ways to think about quantitative research. One could think about the difference of describing data and inferring relationships from data. This approach involves contrasting descriptive and inferential statistics. The person could also think about differences in ways of collecting data. This approach compares practical techniques used to collect data. This chapter does not assume the reader has had either basic or advanced statistics preparation. For this reason, the latter approach will be used in this section, namely comparing techniques. Both experimental and non-experimental techniques will be explored. Before discussing each, there is a need to define the framework of quantitative inquiry, which includes the concepts of variables, measurement, and operational definitions. In quantitative research, the variable is a characteristic that can have different values for different people, places, things. More ideas. Friedman, Pisani, and Purves, 2007, Wiersma, 2000. For example, characteristics of individuals include things such as age, gender, race/ethnicity, religion, etc., and each characteristic can take on different values for different individuals, such as 43 age, male, gender, Asian, race/ethnicity, and Christian religion. Abstract concepts such as motivation or passion can also be variables, meaning each individual may have a different level or kind of motivation or passion. Within the research framework, there are two primary ways of describing variables, independent or dependent. An independent variable implies the cause or prediction of an outcome, and a dependent variable implies the outcome or effect. Take, for example, teacher-student interaction. Wiersma offered the case of teaching method and student achievement in science. The teaching method is the independent variable, and the student outcome is the dependent variable. The purpose of such a study could be to determine to what degree, if any, teaching method affects student academic outcomes. To do this, the researcher would need to be clear on definitions assigned to the variables. An operational definition involves classifying concepts, constructs, or variables to describe their scope and the basis for measuring them. Mitchell, 2004. Operationally defining variables within the research context has two benefits. First, by making clear the purpose of the study, characteristics of the variables being explored and how such variables are to be measured, the researcher strengthens the validity of a study. Second, by providing operational definitions, the results can be compared to studies with similar conditions, thus either providing additional support or contrary evidence to previous research. Take teaching methods, for example. Teaching methods might include giving a lecture, moderating a group discussion, or conducting in-class practical activities. Without clarity on the components that make up the phenomena of teaching methods, the researcher would not be certain which part, if any, affected student achievement. Conversely, without defining student achievement, for example the score of 90% or better out of 100% on a standardized test, the researcher would not be able to establish an effect occurred. Participants also need to be defined. When a researcher states students are sampled, a definition needs to be provided that makes clear what kind of students are sampled, such as currently enrolled sophomore level students who have completed 30 or more college level credits. Additionally, an operational definition needs to explain how the variables will be measured. In the case of students, the researcher might assess student achievement by analyzing multiple choice test scores. For the teaching method variable, surveys might be used to determine the types of teaching methods used, as well as to measure a student perceived rating of each method. Non-experimental survey research. Non-experimental design involves the use of surveys to obtain data from sample participants. Surveys are instruments that contain questions for participants to answer. Surveys can contain yes/no, numerical rating, multiple choice, or open-ended questions, and each of these responses, except for open-ended, are scored numerically. Creswell 2014 stated survey research describes trends, attitudes, or opinions of a population by studying a sample of that population, page 155. When a survey is referred to as a scale, it uses an exclusively numerical rating system. The most prevalent numerical rating system is the Likert scale, which, typically at minimum, would include 5 points, such as 1 to 5, with 1 meaning strongly disagree and 5 meaning strongly agree. Edmondson, 2005, Weirsmith, 2000. For surveys to be useful in scientific research, they must be valid and reliable. There are 3 forms of survey validity, including content, concurrent, and construct validity. Creswell, 2014. Construct validity is the most prevalently used measure for survey validity. Creswell, 2014. To be considered construct valid, a survey must measure what it claims to measure. Concurrent validity refers to an instrument correlating with the results of an established survey, and construct validity refers to whether the individual questions have been confirmed to measure a specific construct's cognitive traits. Take the construct of passion, for example. Vallerand et al. 2003 developed the passion scale using exploratory and confirmatory factor analysis to establish the factors underlying the passion construct and to create the tool for detecting them. Factor analysis is used to explore the possible underlying structure in a set of interrelated variables without imposing any preconceived structure on the outcome. Child, 2006, page 6. In establishing the construct validity, the researcher confirms a survey as valid to measure a specific construct, such as passion. If a survey does not measure the same way each time, the results obtained would not be reliable. A common measure of instrument reliability is the Cronbach's Alpha Score. Peterson, 1994. The score eliminates the need to obtain multiple samples to establish reliability of a survey. Cronbach, 1951. Cronbach's Alpha determines the internal consistency of the survey on a scale of 0 to 1. The higher the score, the more reliable the survey. The conventionally accepted threshold is a score of 0.77 or higher. Peterson, 1994. Keep in mind that doctoral students performing survey research typically use statistical software packages, such as SPSS, to perform validity and reliability tests for surveys. In addition to survey validity and reliability, the sampling design is integral to the validity of the results. Sampling refers to selecting the sample of participants from a larger population. Fowler, 2009. Although there are many sampling designs, random, stratified, and convenience are 3 common approaches in quantitative research. These sampling designs lie on a spectrum from random to non-random selection. For example, in the target population of undergraduate students at a given university, the random sample would give all enrolled undergraduate students at that university an equal chance of being part of the sample group. Suppose a researcher was only interested in male sophomore students. This would be a stratified sample, selected by gender and college level. A convenience sample would be needed if only a portion of the students had publicly accessible emails. It would not be random or randomly stratified, but merely based upon conveniently available participants. Lastly, there are many factors to consider in determining a sufficient sample size. In effect, the larger the sample, the more likely it will be representative of the larger population. Additionally, researchers conducting a quantitative study often perform a power analysis to determine minimum sample size. Statistical power refers to the probability of accurately rejecting the null hypothesis when the null hypothesis is indeed false. The power analysis requires the researcher to determine the desired level of significance, statistical power, the primary effect size, and inferential tests and corresponding groups/variables. Hutt, 2012. With these pieces of information, the researcher can calculate the minimum sample size needed for generalizability purposes. Often researchers use a power table or software to make this calculation. G*Power is the predominant free software used to perform a power analysis. Experimental research. Experimental research is the most reliable method for determining causal relationships, but as Pearl 2001 explained, the idea of cause and effect was not a central, or even desirable, component of initial conceptions of quantitative research. Early statisticians such as Neiman, Pearson, and Fisher all preferred to focus on correlation, not on causation by Ogg, Jaws, and Porsche, 2010, Pearl, 2001. Correlation refers to the degree of relationship between two or more variables. Friedman et al., 2007, Weir-Smith, 2000. Correlation does not imply that cause and effect exist between variables. It simply indicates a relationship exists between two or more variables. For example, the researcher might determine that college-level junior, senior, etc. results in an increase in academic GPA. The higher the college level, the higher the GPA. Now it would seem strange to say that being a junior versus being a sophomore causes a higher GPA, but a person could suppose that maturity, study skills, and consistent preparation in some way cause a higher GPA. To determine the cause of increased GPA, one might design an experiment. A simple experimental design entails comparing two randomly assigned groups within a sample population. One rigorous version of this design is called a random controlled trial. Friedman et al., 2007. The seminal, although imperfect, example of this technique is the Salk polio vaccine field trials of the 1950s. Friedman et al., 2007. In a simple experimental design, one group is the control, which means this group does not receive any stimulus, and one group is the intervention, which means this group receives a testable stimulus. Within experimental research, the researcher endeavors to eliminate threats to validity, or factors that might interfere with determining an observed change in the intervention group when compared to the control group. Camel's causal model, as cited in Shadish and Sullivan, 2012, essentially rests on eliminating threats to validity within the framework of an experimental design. This model strives to eliminate merely chance causes for an effect. As Shadish and Sullivan explained, Camel's formulation rests on two assumptions. The first is the establishment of internal validity, and the second is the establishment of external validity. Internal validity threats are experimental procedures, treatments, or experiences of participants that threaten the researcher's ability to draw correct inference. Creswell, 2014, page 174. The second assumption, external validity, refers to how the observed change in the intervention group could be relevant to the general population. Shadish and Sullivan, 2012. Generalizing the results is known as external validity. As Cartwright, 2004, stated, generalizing the results to different populations is not an easy task, as it requires taking into account nearly perfect alignment of population characteristics, including contextual and situational variables. For example, one threat to external validity is selection bias. Weir-Smith, 2000. Selection bias refers to researchers using personal preference to select and assign participants to control and intervention groups. This introduction of human bias in assignment decreases external validity. As such, there is a need to remedy this threat. One such solution is Rubin's 2004 causal model, which eliminates selection bias by using a mathematical process for assigning units and inferent causes. The experimental design presented in this chapter is simplistic in form. In designing more advanced experiments, there are several items to consider. For example, if it is not possible or preferable to assign participants to groups randomly, this would be considered a quasi-experimental design. Creswell, 2014. Other more advanced experimental designs might include observing a single subject over time, a pretest/posttest configuration, and multiple control and intervention groups with an arrayed pretest/posttest configuration. Creswell, 2014, offers an accessible treatment of these more advanced experiments. Qualitative research. Qualitative research primarily entails the analysis of symbols to explain human experience and interaction. The reason for this is that qualitative research focuses on individuals or groups of individuals, and people use symbols, i.e., signs or words, to describe contexts and situations. The constructivist paradigm might be useful here to explain the scope of qualitative research. If knowledge is constructed socially, and if knowledge creation is about meaning making and is affected substantially by social interaction, then there is a need for an expansive description to define the phenomena of inquiry. As Pontarotto, 2006, explained, the term thick description has come to define the way qualitative researchers acquire and explain knowledge about social interaction. Only through observing the thoughts, feelings, and entire context of experience does the qualitative researcher capture such a thick description of reality. Qualitative researchers use a thick description to obtain holistic or extensively detailed expressions of a context or situation. Describing an apple on a table is a thin description. It is thin in that it does not describe the observer's perspective, nor does it provide details about the physical objects, such as the nuances of variation in color, shape, or texture. Exclaiming that there is an apple on a table does not capture qualities such as why the observer was there, how those items came to be where they were observed, or where the room was located, such as in the specific house, in a specific geographic location. A thick description would likely include all of these qualities. There are a variety of ways qualitative researchers use a thick description to inquire about phenomena. The main approaches include phenomenology, case study, narrative, and grounded theory. Phenomenology. In phenomenological research, researchers inquire about the unique thoughts, feelings, and experiences that help describe people within situations in Maynard, 2002. For example, both researchers and sample participants might want to know about the experience of traveling to work. Do commuters get frustrated when it takes longer than usual to travel to work? How does a person travel to work? The lived experience of traveling to work in this way can be viewed as unique to an individual, such as the unique experience of actually driving in an automobile and sitting in front of steering wheel, steering. To explore these phenomena, the researcher might observe people traveling to work or interview one or more individuals found to travel to work. In each of these examples, the focus is on the subjective experience of the individual. Although there are many phenomenological approaches, there are two predominant types, descriptive and interpretative Finlay, 2009. Case study. Whereas a phenomenological study focuses on individual lived experience, the case study design examines time-sensitive activities that have explicit and tacit rules that affect human experience and interaction. The case study approach was first defined as inquiry for obtaining knowledge about decision-making within particular cases. The more complete definition explains that a case study investigates a contemporary phenomenon in depth and within its real-life context, especially when the boundaries between phenomenon and context are not clearly evident. In 2009, page 18, case studies are time and activity dependent, which means a case study explores a set of activities within a particular time frame. Creswell, 2014. As with other qualitative approaches, the researcher could utilize artifacts, interviews, and observations to explain a particular case, or series of cases. In addition, focus groups and surveys with open-ended questions are often used to collect information from participants. Although numerical surveys are not often used in qualitative research, descriptive information might be collected in a case study to aggregate demographic information about participants, such as the total number of participants, average age, or gender percentages. In 2009 cited Tally's Corner as a seminal example of a single case study. The study explored the experience of African-American men who were frequently found at Tally's Corner in Washington, D.C., in the late 1960s Coles, 1968. The study provided information about a subculture of individuals, their coping behavior, and in particular their sensitivity to unemployment and failure. In 2009, page 49. Although case studies typically include interviews with participants, such interviews might only tell part of the story, or confirm the story a researcher expects to find. Narrative. In narrative inquiry research, the focus is on telling the narrative life stories of participants. This type of inquiry entails expressing the constantly changing but meaningful experience of people. Whereas a case study has well-defined boundaries, such as being time and activity dependent, narrative research tells a story that may not necessarily have such restrictions. Connolly and Clandina, 2000, offered a framework for how this might be implemented. A narrative researcher attempts to realize and embrace the idea that experiences only become isolated when reflected upon. An experience, people hold remnants from past experiences, create new unified experiences, and carry forward these new remnants, while simultaneously interacting with others in situations. Connolly and Clandina, 2000. Narrative researchers often use interviews and researcher observations, sometimes as co-participants in the inquiry, to help tell life stories. Connolly and Clandina offered the example of teacher knowledge. Their example demonstrated how two groups of specific teachers obtained, retained, and expressed the knowledge they used as teachers. Narrative research can be a useful tool to reflect on experiences in particular contexts, with the realization that the retelling of stories creates a new story in and of itself. In this way, narrative research can be transformative. Grounded theory. In contrast, the grounded theory approach focuses less on transformation and more on reducing the effect of preconceived notions in the research activity. Glaser and Strauss 1967/2006 outline the components of grounded theory research. As the term implies, grounded theory builds or discovers theory from the ground up, not by imposing theory on data. This approach requires two or more data collection cycles, and involves viewing all encountered data as possibly useful to an emerging understanding of the topic being researched. This approach differs significantly from quantitative research, which has a limited focus due to predefined variables, and most qualitative approaches, which often only have one data collection cycle. The grounded theory researcher may interview and observe participants to generate themes, examine artifacts, or perform content analysis of written texts, which involves analyzing idea or word frequency in written material. The researcher then interprets the collected data to create a model or theoretical framework. As Glaser and Strauss stated, this is called discovering theory from the data, page 1. In effect, grounded theory is an inductive approach to inquiry, because it creates propositions based upon exemplars found in experience. Its approach to provisionally acknowledging all found data as valuable intersects with the approach employed by mixed method researchers. Mixed methods research. A mixed method researcher utilizes both quantitative and qualitative methods to answer research questions. Specifically, mixed method studies have two sets of questions, one quantitative and one qualitative. In one sense, exploring mixed method approaches brings this chapter full circle, because using the mixture of methods is the way people inquire in everyday life. People use numbers, observed phenomena, and information from others to make decisions. There is still some disagreement amongst researchers as to the usefulness of mixed methods approaches, as they combine paradigmatic lenses, but the pragmatic paradigm offers a coherent way of framing mixed method research. Bremen, 2006. There are several types of mixed method approaches that have been developed, such as convergent design and sequential design. Creswell, 2014. In using a mixed method approach, the researcher has to be clear on the goals of such inquiry. The goal of the project will determine the research design, data analysis, and application of the findings. For example, in convergent designs, the quantitative and qualitative portions are conducted simultaneously. In this type of study, the researcher could convert the data into either quantitative or qualitative formats or display the data side by side. Creswell, 2014. As for application of the findings, approaches might include comparing and contrasting quantitative data, explaining in more detail quantitative findings, or providing support for an intervention in a program evaluation. Creswell, 2014. Depending upon the intended purpose, a mixed method approach will have varying degrees of value for a researcher and the research community. Preliminary considerations. Quantitative and qualitative research approaches. In addition to the philosophical underpinnings of research, there are some preliminary practical concerns that need to be addressed prior to conducting research. These practical issues do not include the actual activities of conducting the research. Rather, they involve defining the nature of variables and phenomena within the context of their respective methodologies. Understanding these integral components will create the foundation upon which to design and implement an actual research study. Operationally defining variables will be discussed first. Next, the nature of phenomena, units of analysis, and units of observation will be explored. Quantitative variables. In conducting quantitative research, the researcher must define the variables of interest. As previously explained, the variable is a characteristic that can have different values for different people, places, things. More ideas. Friedman et al., 2007, Weirsmith, 2000. For example, characteristics of individuals include things such as age, gender, race/ethnicity, religion, etc., and each characteristic can take on different values for different individuals, such as 43 age, male, gender, Asian, race/ethnicity, and Christian religion. In this section, operationally defining variables will be discussed. In addition, a short discussion of correlation and group comparison will be presented as an extension of defining the variables of interest. Operationally defining variables. As previously mentioned, operational definitions involve classifying concepts, constructs, or variables to describe their scope and the basis for measuring them. Mitchell, 2004. Again, operationally defining variables within the research context has benefits. First, by making clear the purpose of the study, characteristics of the variables being explored, and how such variables are to be measured, the researcher strengthens the validity of a study. Second, by providing operational definitions, the results can be compared to studies with similar conditions, thus either providing additional support or contrary evidence to previous research. As Stevens 1935 stated, science is knowledge agreed upon by members of society. Only those constructs based upon operations which are public and repeatable are admitted to the body of science, page 517. As such, there must be consensus on the definition, and it must be clear for others to use for replication. There are two parts to Stevens 1935, 1946 approach to operationally defining variables. First, the researcher must provide a general description for the variable of interest. Second, the researcher must define a specific procedure for measuring the variable. To do the latter, one must understand the concept of measurement. As Stevens 1946 stated, measurement, in the broadest sense, is defined as the assignment of numerals to objects or events according to rules. The fact that numerals can be assigned under different rules leads to different kinds of scales and different kinds of measurement. Page 677. As such, Stevens 1946 developed scales of measurement commonly used today. They include nominal, ordinal, interval, and ratio levels of measurement. Nominal variables are those assigned a number for the sake of labeling slash differentiating the variable category. Take, for example, leadership types. In this case, the variable is leadership type. The variable could be defined to have several categories of types, such as transactional, transformation, servant, and authentic. These four types could be labeled 1, 2, 3, and 4. The labels would be just for the purpose of classifying each leadership type. In this way, one could refer to them as category 1, category 2, etc. Ordinal variables are not only assigned numbers for sake of classification but also those in which there is an inherent order to the numbers slash categories. Take, for example, grade level. There are not only different grades, but the grades go in order: first grade, second grade, third grade, etc. In this case, the variable is grade level. The researcher could define an ordinal variable with several levels, such as grade levels 1 to 6. Each level would have a corresponding number, i.e., 1 to 6. Interval variables are those assigned numbers, with an order, and with meaningful intervals distance between the numbers. Take, for example, grade point average GPA. Often GPA is measured on a 4.0 scale. Take a 3.2 GPA for example. There is an order, in that 3.2 is higher than 3.1, but lower than 3.3. There are also meaningful intervals between the numbers. The distance between 3.3 and 3.2 is the same distance between 3.2 and 3.1. Other examples of interval variables include an intelligence quotient IQ and temperature in degrees of Celsius or Fahrenheit. Ratio variables are those assigned numbers, with an order, with meaningful intervals distance between the numbers, and with an absolute zero. The cardinal number scale, i.e., 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. Stevens, 1946, has the property of a ratio scale in that there is an absolute not conventional zero point, with an order, and meaningful intervals. Other examples of ratio variables include height, weight, distance, and age number of years. In operationally defining variables, researchers can then infer combinations of variables that one might collect and analyze to answer research questions. Correlation and group comparison in understanding how to operationalize variables, descriptions and levels of measurement. New researchers can begin to understand the basis for most quantitative research designs, such as correlations and group comparisons. Simple bivariate correlations refer to analyzing the relationship in terms of strength and direction between two interval/ratio variables. Although combinations of correlations can be construed in much more complex ways, e.g., regression, new researchers need to understand that the basis for these more complex study designs start with grasping simple bivariate correlations. Bivariate correlations are the basis for correlational designs. Similarly, Simple group comparisons refer to analyzing the difference, usually mean difference, between two nominal/ordinal variables. Although combinations of group comparisons can be construed in much more complex ways, e.g., analysis of covariance, new researchers need to understand that the basis for these more complex study designs start with grasping simple group comparisons. Group comparisons are the basis for causal comparative and experimental designs. Qualitative phenomena. In conducting qualitative research, the researcher must define the phenomenon of interest. Since researchers do not typically use variables in qualitative studies, the qualitative researcher must employ different procedures to describe the scope and nature of the phenomenon of interest. As such, in qualitative research, to make sense of the phenomenon of interest, two important concepts need to be defined: units of analysis and units of observation. Defining units of analysis, year 2014 explained that a unit of analysis is the focal unit, i.e., who or what of interest in the research study. Some examples include individuals, groups, events, or organizations. Of interest to psychology, Patton 2015 offered an elaboration of this list by including units focused on structure, e.g., processes, programs, or projects, and perspectives, e.g., shared experience. All qualitative studies have a main unit of analysis, i.e., who or what of the study, and some have both a primary unit of analysis and secondary units, called embedded units, year 2014. In defining the unit of analysis of a qualitative study, the researcher provides the focus of the phenomenon of interest. For example, suppose a researcher wants to explore decision-making in teachers choosing intervention strategies. The teacher's decisions on intervention strategies would be the phenomenon of interest, and the unit of analysis would be the teacher's individuals. Without operationally defined variables in qualitative studies, to maintain trustworthiness of the research findings, the researcher must provide clear definition of the units of analysis of the study. To do this, the researcher must identify the who or what of the study and the level at which this who or what will be analyzed to answer research questions about the who or what. Finally, to begin this process, the researcher needs to decide on a who or what to be studied. Ultimately, the who or what is derived from the gap statement that the researcher creates as the basis for the study. Gap considerations. Over the past decade, scholars have given considerable attention to the practical issues involved in identifying the research gaps. The notion of a research gap is a scientific term referring to some absence of knowledge or understanding about a topic of interest. In exploring how we come to research topics of interest, scholars have suggested different justifications for research foci. Alvesen and Sandberg, 2011. Classifications of reasons for gaps. Robinson, Salt and Ha, and McCoy, 2011. And types of research gaps. MELL or Block and Krantz, 2015. The purpose of this section is to explore one particular schema that new researchers can use to find and justify gaps, as well as to identify practical considerations in creating a gap statement for dissertation research. Identifying the gap. As MELL 2017A stated, identifying the gap involves the following: A. Studying the scholarly research on the proposed topic. B. Identifying potential research needs or future research agendas defined in this scholarly research. And C. Using these needs or agendas to develop a set of arguments to prove the research need or gap exists. Parag. 5. A proposed topic should start with the ultimate goals of the research lens, 2016. These goals vary depending upon the use within a particular program. As such, the researcher needs to consider the purpose first. A business topic would differ widely from an education or psychology topic lens, 2016. In addition, doctoral programs in business, education, and psychology have emphases. In thinking about a topic of interest, the researcher should think about the broader goals, e.g., business, education, or psychology, narrow down depending upon the chosen emphasis, and begin exploring the literature on the topic of interest based upon the broader goals and emphases. These broader goals and emphases will provide a host of keywords that could be used to search the literature. They will also provide theories that help to define the broader body of literature. Identifying the relevant theory oftentimes will lead to empirical research in which to identify a gap. Additionally, literature reviews conducted by scholars within the content area could provide another framework to conceive of identifying the need or research gap. Justifying the gap. MELL 2016-2017B offers several ways to justify the need for a study: A. Societal, community, or professional needs. B. Recommendations from other empirical studies and literature reviews. C. Replications. D. Broad area contributions. E. Synthesis creating an innovative new topic. And F. Reframed studies. Ultimately, the researcher must provide a logical justification for the choice, and this typically involves combining two or more of these approaches to justify the research need or gap. Mall, 2017b. This section will explore some of these options in more detail. One useful starting point for justifying the need for a study is identifying recommendations. Most empirical studies, and some literature reviews and theoretical papers, offer recommendations for future research. Such recommendations can be practical or scientific. For example, the recommendations from a literature review on student engagement might highlight the practical need to develop programs for teachers to foster higher student engagement. Conversely, the result of an empirical study on student engagement might recommend a specific methodology, e.g., quantitative and data collection approach, e.g., surveys to determine how teachers approach student engagement. Both of these recommendations might be useful, but for different reasons. The practical recommendation would highlight the societal, community, or professional need to further explore student engagement, while the scientific recommendation would highlight a specific approach to research a specific topic or gap in the literature. Deciding on how to evaluate each choice depends upon how they might be coupled with other ways of justifying the gap. The stronger case for future research is clearly the scientific recommendation, but the only way to confirm this is to find good evidence to support this approach. The recommendation alone is not enough. In the case of student engagement, if the researcher explored a broad area of student engagement and determined that there were several studies providing some indication that this recommended study would be a contribution, then the use of the recommendation for the gap statement would be justified. Suppose that no further evidence could be found that the recommendation was either valid or warranted. In this case, the recommendation would not be useful to create the gap statement. Recommendations for future research, empirical studies, literature reviews, and theoretical papers may have recommendations for future research. Both literature reviews and theoretical papers can offer important recommendations for future studies, but they also have limitations. The conclusions drawn from literature review recommendations are purely based upon conclusions from a synthesis of the literature. The same holds for a theory paper, except that the theory or model typically offers additional support for the recommendation. From an evidence standpoint, empirical studies provide the best evidence of these three sources, and the recommendations from empirical studies are stronger as they are not just based upon a review of literature or a theory/model. They are in part based upon conclusions drawn from the empirical study itself. Recommendations from empirical studies serve two kinds of purposes. First, they form a basis for recommendations for other researchers to replicate or extend the findings of the present study. Second, they exist as overt announcements of follow-up studies that the authors themselves might use as the basis for their own future studies. For these reasons, recommendations for future research from empirical studies are especially useful. To ensure that the recommendations are valid, the inquirer should verify a few items. First, the author S should hold sufficient credentialing to validly conduct research, such as a terminal degree, e.g., ed., Ph.D., DBA, etc. Second, the article should be published in a reputable academic journal. Recommendations from books or book chapters have much less merit due to diminished peer review. Reputable academic journals include either open access or non-open access journals that have a peer review process. In most cases, reputable open and non-open access journals will not charge a fee to publish articles, or will charge a nominal fee to defray costs. This contrasts with predatory journals, which have a limited peer review process and often charge large amounts of money for publication rights. Third, the recommendation needs to be validated through completing a literature review to provide ample evidence and a logical argument for the merits of the recommendation. In contrast, on the topic of student engagement, the practical recommendation would highlight the societal, community, or professional need to explore the topic further. Although the practical recommendation does not alone provide a basis for a gap statement, it does provide an indication of the need to solve a practical problem, which might indicate a research need. In this case, the researcher would have to identify empirical research recommending this research focus, find similar studies that could be replicated, or synthesize a broad body of literature that indicates the need for this type of research study. Even though the practical consideration is not the strongest recommendation, When coupled with one of these other approaches, it could result in a justified study that could define a gap statement. Even when the recommendation for future research is not identified, other approaches such as a reframing studies, a synthesis creating a new topic, and replicating studies could be used to create the gap statement. Reframing studies from a problem to a solution focus is one way to justify a potential gap. Mall, 2017b. Suppose in reviewing several studies, it becomes apparent that there is a problem with student motivation to achieve academically. Instead of looking at the problem of student motivation, perhaps the problem could be framed as a solution, such as teacher approaches to fostering an autonomy-supportive learning environment. In reviewing the literature on this topic, it might become apparent that there is a dearth of evidence to show how teachers foster autonomy support. This would provide justification for the gap statement. A synthesis is the combining of previously known or published information to create new ideas and knowledge leading to the expansion of an academic field of study. Durso, 2016. As such, by definition, performing a synthesis of the literature should produce new and possibly innovative ways of viewing the body of literature. The result would be a thesis, which could form the basis for a gap statement. While a review of literature will be the foundation for any of the ways of justifying a gap statement, a synthesis to create an innovative way of viewing the literature can be used in combination with other approaches, e.g., societal needs, recommendation for future research, reframing studies, etc. to justify the choice of gap statement. Finally, replication studies could be used as the basis for a gap statement. According to their dissertation 2012, quantitative replication-based dissertations involve one of three types: duplication, generalization, or extension. Duplication involves an identical repeating of an original study. Generalization involves replicating to determine if the original study results could be generalized across different populations, treatments, contexts, or times. Extension refers to utilizing different variables or methods to extend an investigation of a topic. These approaches outline quantitative research replication, but there are also merits to replicating qualitative research. Qualitative replication-based dissertations have similarities with the quantitative approaches, with some deviation based on the demands of qualitative research. Morefcc, 2010. Trustworthiness criteria define some of these demands. Annie, 2014. As such, although it is possible to duplicate a qualitative study by using the same research questions, design, and data sources, the context and population would be by definition different, as qualitative studies do not use variables and generalizability. In place of generalizability, however, a qualitative researcher could use the transferability approach to justify applying the results to a significantly different population. Annie, 2014. In contrast, one could easily perform an extension of a qualitative study by using different data sources or some other modification of methods to extend the findings of the original research study. Under these conditions, there is warrant to replicate a qualitative study. Creating a gap statement. Creating a gap statement is the first step to deciding a research study. The gap statement forms the foundation for the study problem statement, purpose statement, and research questions. There are several steps to creating a gap statement. These steps include identifying the gaps, justifying the gaps, and then writing a statement that captures the identified need or research gaps. The finding and justifying the gap were explored in a previous section. As such, the focus of this section will be on writing the gap statement. The gap statement should closely adhere to the justification used for the gap. For example, if a recommendation for future research is the primary basis for the gap, then the wording and focus of the recommendation needs to be reflected in the gap statement. This also holds for replication studies. Typically, the gap statement should refer to literature supporting the need or gap, an introductory phrase, such as "there is a lack of evidence," and a summary of important parts of the topic of interest. Conclusion. The purpose of this chapter was to explain the nature of inquiry. First, there was a discussion of the similarities and differences between ordinary and scientific inquiry. Second, there was an exploration of some of the central parts of scientific reasoning. Third, research paradigms and an overview of research methodology and designs was provided. Fourth, some preliminary practical concerns were discussed. Finally, there was a discussion of considerations for identifying and justifying the need or gap in the literature, as well as creating a gap statement. Although the information presented in this chapter is not exhaustive of all necessary information to conduct a scientific study, it does hopefully provide a good foundation upon which to build further knowledge about research and methodology. Check for understanding at which levels do events occur. Which qualitative research design involves storytelling? Which quantitative research design involves establishing causation? What are several ways to justify a gap statement? What is a unit of analysis? Answers: events occur at three general levels, global, contextual, and situational. In narrative research, the focus is on telling the narrative life stories of participants. Experimental research may result in establishing the causal link between variables of interest. There are several ways to justify a gap statement, including A. societal, community, or professional needs, B. recommendations from other empirical studies and literature reviews, C. replications, D. broad area contributions, E. synthesis creating an innovative new topic, and F. reframed studies. Typically, two or more of these ways would be needed to provide good justification for the gap statement. The unit of analysis is the focal unit, i.e., who or what of interest in a qualitative research study. Some examples include individuals, groups, events, or organizations. Flip text. Glossary abduction, the research method that begins with an observation and moves directly to a theory in search of the simplest reason for the explanation. Case study design, the research design intended to investigate in a real-life setting a particular phenomenon or set of related contemporary phenomena that share common characteristics. Causation, a relationship in which one variable produces an effect and another variable. Experimental designs are the most effective in established causal relationships. Constructivist paradigm, the paradigm in which researchers viewed knowledge and reality is socially constructed, which places an emphasis on contextual factors. Convergent design, a mixed method design that collects and analyzes both quantitative and qualitative data simultaneously, compares the two data sets, and then interprets combined findings. Correlation, in quantitative research, the degree to which two or more variables are associated or vary together. Variables can be either positively or negatively correlated. Deductive reasoning, the type of reasoning that subtracts items no longer relevant because of new information. Epistemology, the theory of knowledge within scientific research which implies rules for evidence within a scientific discipline. Experimental design, the research design in which an independent variable is manipulated and there is random assignment of participants to a particular condition. External validity, refers to the relevancy of findings from a scientific study to the general population, the degree to which the findings hold for other people or contexts. Grounded theory, a qualitative research method that employs collecting and synthesizing data about a phenomenon in order to construct a theory or model. G*Power is a free software used to perform a power analysis. Heuristics, cognitive shortcuts that reduce the cognitive load necessary to come to conclusions, also called rules of thumb. Hypotheses are predictive statements of relationships between variables or groups in quantitative studies. They have the requirement of being tested. In quantitative research, at minimum, there is one alternative and one null hypothesis. Inductive reasoning, the type of reasoning that involves a subjective assessment based upon exemplars found in experience. Internal validity, the truth of findings within a quantitative study. This refers to the degree to which a different cause, other than the one identified, might have produced a specific effect within a scientific study. Methodology, the study of techniques for conducting research. Narrative inquiry, a qualitative research perspective based on telling stories as a way to study an experience. Non-experimental design, the research design in which an independent variable is not manipulated and/or there is no random assignment of participants to a particular condition. Ontology, the study of what really and truly exists in nature. Operational definition, a definition of a phenomenon in measurable terms. Paradigm, an example or model of a particular practice. Phenomenology, a qualitative research perspective that focuses on describing or interpreting the lived experiences of individuals. Positivist paradigm, the paradigm in which researchers measure objects in the real world with the intent of discovering facts that increase a body of human knowledge. In this paradigm, contextual factors are not of primary concern. Postpositivist paradigm, the paradigm in which researchers use measurements to discover facts, but such facts are deemed falsifiable, which introduces the need for exhaustively testing hypotheses. Power analysis. The power analysis involves determining a statistically valid minimum sample size by using the desired level of significance, statistical power, the primary effect size, and inferential tests and corresponding groups/variables. Pragmatic paradigm. The paradigm that assumes the need to employ all practical means to obtain knowledge, including the analysis of both quantitative and qualitative data. Proposition. A statement about phenomena that does not imply the need to be tested. Seminal. An original researcher, research study, model, or theory. Sequential design. A mixed method design that collects and analyzes both quantitative and qualitative data sequentially. Different types of sequential designs dictate which is collected first. Statistical power. Statistical power refers to the probability of accurately rejecting the null hypothesis when the null hypothesis is indeed false. Statistics. The use of numerical values and formulas to predict the relationship of phenomena. Subjective. Influenced by personal feelings or biases, based on internal perception and not external reality. Survey research. A quantitative research design in which surveys are used to obtain data from sample participants. Synthesis. The combining of previously known or published information to create new ideas and knowledge leading to the expansion of an academic field of study. Thick description. Description that includes information about the behavior and action of participants and the contexts thereof, as well as the perceptions and worldview of the participants, such that meaning for the participants is understandable to outsiders through specifying numerous details about the context. The concept emerged in qualitative research through the work of Geertz's 1973 advance within the field of anthropology for the description of culture, and is now accepted across many fields that study human behavior. On Toronto, 2006. Transformative paradigm, the paradigm in which there is an assumption that humans are oppressed in modern culture. This approach assumes research should empower individuals to lift the constraints that limit human potential through discovering knowledge. Trustworthiness, the overarching concept in qualitative research that stands for reliability and validity. The concept addresses the questions: is the study worth paying attention to? Is the quality of the research worthwhile? Unit of analysis, the focal unit, i.e., who or what of interest in the research study. Some examples include individuals, groups, events, organizations, structures, e.g., processes, programs, or projects and perspectives, e.g., shared experience. Variable, the unique attributes about an individual or group that can be changed to allow researchers to compare and contrast with other individuals or groups. This helps in establishing differences in treatment, change, or effect.